for listening to the Gut Munchers Internet Podcast.
Welcome to the very first episode of the Gut Munchers Podcast. I'm John, and with me today from BloodTypeOnline.com is my good friend Ed. How's it going, Ed?
Very good. How you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Seems like old times a little bit, huh?
Oh, yeah. And it's rather appropriate, too, because, you know, this is the Gut Munchers podcast, and what two movies are we talking about?
We're going to do Zombie and City of the Living Dead, so we're going to get some Fulci goodness
for the first show.
So, I guess my question to you is, how you been doing, and what do you think about the movies we chose, and...
Well, I've been doing pretty good for the most part. Okay. Buried in snow right now Pittsburgh here. So, other than that, pretty good. I've been getting a chance to enjoy some movies, and obviously these are two of my Fulci favorites. So I'm looking forward to them.
As is mine, and I don't want to go overboard on the small talk or chit chat, but this is the January edition, show one, the January 2009 edition of the show. And I think February's going to start out good. I think you and I have something going on the first day of February. I can't remember what it is, though. Wait, yeah. The Pittsburgh Steelers are in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, bitches, we're going to win six.
Yeah, six. Six, definitely. Damn it, we can't lose to the Cardinals, but...
Now, nobody else has ever done six, so it's only fitting that the Steelers would be the team to do it.
True. Yeah,
and you might be asking, the people out there listening to this might ask themselves, what does this have to do with horror? Well, ask the Cardinals after the game, and I think we'll find out.
Well, you know, the other thing, people out there who are asking themselves what this has to do with horror, you know, it's my podcast, and I wanted to say something about the Steelers, so what are you going to do?
Yeah. We could brawl over it, I guess, if people really want to get serious.
Yeah, sure. No, I don't think so. I'm not a brawler. I'm too weak, so... But, all right, so I guess that makes enough of the chit-chat. We're going to go into a short break here, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Zombie, and I think we'll start with that one. Does it sound good to you?
Sounds very good.
Cool.
It is midnight on a tropical island. A beautiful young girl's long hair streams against the coral reef. Her beautiful body is caressed by the tide. Suddenly, a decayed hand rises up and blood-drenched jaws move to bite her. The living dead walk again. Zombies. They are decaying. They are missing from their graves. They live and hunger for your flesh. There is no place you can hide. Zombie, you are what they eat. No one under 17 will be admitted.
Zombie flesh eaters. Zombie flesh eaters. Zombie flesh eaters. Now playing at a theater near you.
And we're back. Again, sorry for the little shout out for the Steelers in the first segment, but you know, it's my first show and I'm excited about my Steelers. So, but we're going to talk a little bit about a Fulci classic available from Blue Underground, and that'd be Zombie. And hey, Ed, why don't you go ahead and do a quick plot synopsis for everybody?
Okay, I'm going to tell everybody real quick what this one's about, even though it's not really that important. It is a Fulci movie. Basically, what happens at the beginning of the movie, a boat shows up on the New York Harbor. Kind of unattended. The police show up. They actually find what would become to be a zombie in the film. Then you learn that Tisa Farrow, who plays a girl named Anne in the film, is the daughter of the owner of the ship. She wants to know where her father is, what's going on. And basically, with one of the journalists played by Ian McCullough, her and him kind of get together and figure they're going to go on this voyage to find out what happened, which means they have to go to an island called Matul with one of the people that I love seeing in all Italian films is Al Cliver, who ends up taking them to the island. And, of course, on the island, there's a doctor there performing some experiments, doing some stuff like that. Basically, it's an island where the living dead are coming back to life, so to speak. So, and from that point on, you know, it's just pure fun, Fulci chaos, like you would expect in a Italian gut muncher.
There you go.
Do you like that?
Yeah, it ties in nicely.
Yeah, I worked on it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, dude. I love this movie. This is probably one of my, this is definitely probably got to be my favorite non-Romero zombie film. Though I do love the other one we're going to talk about too as well. But from a pure out zombie standpoint, I don't know, dude. It just, I love the look of the creatures. I love the effects. And like you said, yeah, it's just, plot's not important with a Fulci film.
Yeah, the thing that I like about this movie is, you know, a lot of people might know some of the history behind it. George Romero's Dawn of the Dead came out in Italy as Zombie. They tried to capitalize on the popularity and the success that movie had. They called this one Zombie 2. We know it as Zombie with an IE at the end. It was Zombie with an I in Italy. But the thing that I wanted to say about this movie is, you know, when you talk about zombie films, a lot of stuff comes back to Romero and how a lot of it's derivative from Romero. Well, there's two films that I think actually took from Night of the Living Dead and actually expanded on it a little bit more. And those two movies are Bob Clark's Children of the Living Dead and this one. It's kind of a colorized, more of a, in the personality of Fulci, you know, there's a lot more gore and stuff like that. I think this film actually relates a lot more to Night of the Living Dead than to Dawn of the Dead, which it was supposed to be a sequel to.
Yeah, was it really, though? I mean,
just in name, yeah. I know they were kind of, I mean, you just figured that if they were going to kind of sequelize it in some way, shape, or form, that they would have had it maybe relate to Dawn a little bit more than Night. But this movie really seems a lot more like Night to me, and it's hard to explain, but, you know, maybe other people. I've heard a lot of people say the same thing, too. And it just, it's not stealing directly from Romero. It just kind of has that feeling of claustrophobia once they're on the island and, you know, stuff like that. And I think that, you know, mixed in with the gore and the overall atmosphere of the film, I think that's why it stacks up really well against, you know, Romero's zombie films and, like, the better zombie films out there.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I mean, I guess the funny thing is knowing that this came out like a year after Dawn, how do you think the effects stand up? Because personally, I mean, if I were to be pressed, I think actually the zombies in this movie look better than the Dawn of the Dead zombies. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, other than the one, of course, and I think we'll talk about it in a while here, other than the one really iconic kill, I don't know that any of the kills actually have the personality or are as good as Savini's kills, except for maybe the one, like I say, we'll talk about.
Well, you know what? I think that there's a distinct difference, I guess, in the effects and the way that they're portrayed in both films, you know, while we're comparing them here. I think with, like, Dawn of the Dead, it's complete overload. It's just like, you know, like, just for an example in Dawn, not to completely go off on it, but, like, whenever they're breaking into the apartment building, and they're seeing people everywhere. I mean, there's people getting their heads blown up, and people are getting bit, and it's just total chaos. With the zombie, it's more brooding. Like the example of the scene where the lady gets the wood shard in the eye from the door. I mean, it's more like in your face and like building it up to that one moment of gore, when I think Dawn just uses the gore as an added thing. And in Zombie, gore is completely on the forefront, and that's the reason why this film is so good, in my opinion.
I can't disagree with that. You know, I guess if you're a zombie fan, and of course not only just this movie, but in general, if you've ever seen this movie, that one scene with the eyeball has to stick out. I mean,
well, you know what? That's a scene gore-wise that sticks out. But to me, and I'm sure you'll probably agree with me on this, because it seems like everybody is on the same page with this, even people I know that don't even like the movie, mm-hmm. but the scene where it's the zombie versus the shark, which is one of the most unique scenes ever in any horror film I've ever seen. It's just so mind-blowing. And funny enough, too, I watched this movie again, say a few days ago, and I was surprised at how well it stood up. I mean, obviously there's a real shark and a fake shark used in the scene, but it's edited together pretty well, and it's a surprising scene considering that it's how old now, you know?
Yeah, almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually 30 years. 2009.
Damn. It sure is.
Yeah, I mean, the shark scene is the other one that jumps out. And I, you know, whenever a movie can give you two iconic scenes that at least genre fans or people that have ever seen the movie will remember, like you said, whether they like it or not. I have mm-hmm. the same experience with the I have a couple of friends who I've showed it to. They loved it. I have a couple that I've shown it to that they kind of went, oh, it's a little boring and strange.
Mm-hmm.
But they both, I mean, both, all four of them, I should say, remember the shark, and they remember that scene with the wood in the eye, and that freaks a lot of people out. I mean,
mm-hmm.
But then violence towards the eye, I mean, that's, I think it's a good way to get a hold of somebody, really grab them by the guts and be like, look at this, pay attention to this, and it's funny, too, because I don't know if you had this experience as well. People who are very squeamish about that, a lot mm-hmm. of times when I show something to somebody that and they're being very squeamish, you know, they're looking away, they're covering their eyes. But during that, the scene where it's coming towards the eye, I don't know how he managed to pull this effect off. But if you, when I watch people, they can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
They can't stop watching. They have to watch the whole scene, even though they know it's freaking them out.
Mm-hmm.
They have to. They just can't help it.
Yeah, and it's a credit to Fulci and to the wonderful effects in the movie, is that, you know, there's a lot of things in the movie that aren't up to par, let's be honest. I mean, it has dubbing issues, and I mean, that's part of the fun. I mean, if you like these type of films, you know, it doesn't bother you. But the thing about it is, you can sit here and you can crack jokes and you can have a good fun time with the movie, but like you said, when that scene comes up, that's generally the time where the jokes stop and people are kind of like, oh my God, you know, the effect takes a back seat to how some of it might not be a perfectly made film. You know what I mean? And I think that certainly adds to the movie, and that's the charm of a lot of Fulci stuff, is the fact that the gore stands out like that. And it's not just gore for gore's sake. I mean, he's really going out of his way to try and turn the stomach of his audience. And I think that's why Fulci stands the test of time, and that's why he's such a big name in horror as far as fans go.
You know, and I'll get into a little bit about the same kind of subject when it comes to the next Fulci movie we're going to talk about, But speaking along the lines of Fulci as a director,
mm-hmm.
There are a few shots here where I guess what I should get to the heart of it instead of playing pussyfooting around here. But basically, I just think Fulci doesn't get the credit as a technical director that I think he should.
Yeah.
Because there are so many, even the iconic eye scene, if you see the cuts that are involved and how he frames certain parts of the scene and uses four things in the foreground to frame your eye and draw your eye to a place. I mean, because I don't know why, and maybe this is a good place to a good thing to talk about a little bit here. But he seems to get like this bashed on a little bit as a hack director, and I just don't get it.
Yeah, and if anybody out there, you know, is interested in Lucio Fulci and wants to find out more, I highly recommend a book. It's from Stephen Thrower. It's called Beyond the Terror. It's a wonderful book. But the book really examines that and a DVD. It's, you can get it from Tempe right now. It's out. It's called Para, and it has to do with you know, interviewing a ton of people that work with Fulci. But you find out when you find that information about the guy that he was a pretty intelligent person as far as the arts went. He understood film and filmmaking. He started out as a writer. He's worked in a lot of different genres. I mean, the guy's made, it amazes me, put it this way, that somebody knows how to make a horror film as effective and as brooding as he does, but the guy also made a lot of sex comedies too. So it shows you that he does understand a way of conveying emotion, because if you ask me, two of the hardest genres to make a film in would be horror and comedy. Because you have to get a reaction out of people, and if you don't, the movie doesn't work. So I think that regardless of you know, what kind of film he's making, and I think it shows, too, like you said, with the framing and the way that he shoots everything, he's looking to get general emotion from the audience instead of just shooting stuff to look nice or you know, like doing something grandiose because he can or blowing up an entire set. It's more about the small little things. And I think that's why he does frame stuff like that, and that's why he does show things in his particular vision like that, because he wants to draw a certain emotion from you, and he understands that if he can't do that, then the movie's going to be a complete failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, I just think that's a testament to the guy being a really, really good director. He understands that, you know, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we watch a lot of movies. We review films. The ones that are the best are the ones that kind of affect you in some way, shape, or form, whether you relate to them or they just can get to you on some certain level. I mean, for an example, for me, I remember Zombie from when I was a kid at the video store, okay?
Yeah, and I'd that great photo cover.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think I've told you this story before. It was a movie that I wanted to see for a long time, but for some reason, every time I went to the video store as a kid, I just couldn't pick it up and rent it. It was something about that cover that just irked me. And to this day, I still don't know what it is other than it was being creepy. But, I mean, I had seen Romero zombie films and stuff like that. It's just something about that cover that was so intimidating. And that's what I think is the power of a lot of Fulci's work, is it's kind of intimidating horror, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think that kind of goes back to what I said, which, again, you know, we're both absolutely huge fans. And I know that we, personally, we both love George Romero movies. And I will put, you know, the gore in any of either Dawn or Day against any other film, because I think it really holds up well. But the design of the zombies, they don't have the personality and the cool names that you might get out of Dawn. Day's different, I think. Day's a little bit different. But yeah, the look of the zombies in Fulci, they actually, you know, sure, I guess if you wanted to be all cranky and stuff, like, well, you know, those zombies that come rising out of the graves, they're not buried very deep. That's not realistic. But the idea that they actually put real worms in the effect, and it looks like a decaying body, and they sit up the way they do, I just thought that was it does. I mean, even if somebody who had been at that point had already grown up on the Romero films, and I also didn't see Zombie till I was probably about 13 or 14, so I had already seen the Romero films. They were just, it blew me away because of the look of the zombie. I just thought the effects were so cool, and then of course, you know, they have me at the shark, and then with the other effect with the eye, but you know, and you know, to be fair, I also want to point out I think there are some defects here, or not, maybe not necessarily defects, but disappointments. It almost seems like after that kill, the one really memorable kill, they didn't have anything else to give you memorably wise. I mean, you have some bullet hits which are well done. You have some zombies which look pretty good, but even the zombies that go after them in the village there are very pale, and a lot of the blue makeup effect with some oatmeal looking stuff on them. And it seems like it was kind of uneven as a film goes with the effects. What do you think about that?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Well,
I just
feel like the effects are a little uneven. You get some brilliant stuff with like the eye and the scene where the zombies rise up off the dirt, and you have the very decayed looking one like from the photo cover. It just seems like after that, though, there's parts of the movie like they never quite reach that level of kill. It doesn't build to this crescendo like a lot of other movies where they keep outdoing themselves in the movie. It's like, wow, we had this really killer effect. We give it to you early on, and then it's a little too pedestrian along the rest of the way kill-wise.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and I think that is the one minor downfall of this movie. And it's the fact that, you know, let's just say, without giving away the ending of the film, I think I could put it in a way that you'll get me. The movie itself is very dependent on the effects and how well they come off, like you said. And as it goes along, it is very uneven. And when the ending of the film comes, instead of, like you said, some huge crescendo of maybe effects or some very shocking scene, it goes to an ending which is based upon the story of the film. And the story of the film is pretty weak, and you're not going to end it on the best note if you're relying on the story to give you an ending. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and again, without giving anything away, I did find it interesting when I was doing my research after getting prepared for the show, my show research, that the wraparound, the beginning and the end of the movie, were added on afterwards.
Yeah.
I guess the script actually existed for this movie before before Dawn of the Dead came out, and then that they added the wraparound to kind of tie it in so they could put the Zombie 2 moniker on it. And in a way, you know, I guess that also kind of annoys people because they're like, whoa, why would they do that? For me, and it's just a side note, as a fan of Italian filmmaking, that just kind of puts a smile on my face to see them. Because, you know, let's be honest, a lot of that stuff was exploiting other bigger movies, so.
But you know what? I will say this, too. Absolutely, you're 100% correct. A lot of the Italian stuff was to capitalize financially on already successful films. But I don't think that anybody out there has been so successful at making pretty decent films that are just complete ripoffs than the Italians. I think that they are the top number one, you know, ranked person or people to do that.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, primarily because I think they actually put a lot of effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of other filmmakers would be like, well, this is just a knockoff. You know, it's just I'm kind of leaning heavily on a popular movie that's doing well. But, you know, like with Fulci, he put a lot of care into his film. And, you know, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm bashing on him. I did think there were some issues. I love the camera work. I love a lot of the effects. But I did think it petered out a little bit. Speaking of the story, I thought it was pretty straightforward and pretty interesting. But I thought the story kind of worked for me, how they got the people to the island. Because, I mean, basically, in a movie like this, and even in other movies that we're talking about, like, you know, Romero's big three, his original three, the story basically gets people in an isolated area and then makes them, you know, deal with zombies. And I thought Fulci did a pretty good job with it.
The thing that I like about this movie, and I know you'll like this, actually, because you're a fan of a lot of the older zombie films. Prior to the Romero universe of zombies, most of the zombie films made had to do with voodoo. And this is actually kind of more of a return to that, even though it's not necessarily brought up. I mean, it's hinted at, and it's just the atmosphere that they're in. It's almost like bringing voodoo back to the zombie film.
Yeah, there's a voodoo element to it. And it's funny you said that, because they hint a voodoo thing, and then also the medical doctor they're working on it, trying to figure it out, and he's identifying it as a disease. But is it a jungle disease? Is it some voodoo ceremony? I just like the fact they kept that entire thing really vague.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of winged it. They just kind of did it.
I think there's a lot of zombie movies that take a wrong turn when they start explaining too much. Because, I mean, the fear in a zombie film is the claustrophobia that the characters are feeling. And if you know too much, it just doesn't work as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to know that, you know, these are the rules. And in some movies, I guess that's kind of fun to know the rules. But, oh, crap, you know, you got bit, you're going to turn, you're in trouble. But with this, you just never know. And, of course, it doesn't get as wacky as some of the later Italian zombie movies where you have zombies running around shooting machine guns. That gets a little silly. And there's no nipple-biting midget in this one either, so.
That's true, yes.
So we'll just leave that nipple-biting midget comment out there for the fans who know what we're talking about. Woohoo. I don't know, dude. I just think this is a marvelous little movie.
It is, and another thing I wanted to bring up too, because me and you were both recently talking about this. We were both pretty familiar with the movie, you know, beforehand.
Yeah.
But we both got a chance recently to watch the Blue Underground DVD of it, and the one that I had, and I'm pretty sure it's the one you had, was the Anchor Bay version of it, and they really did a good job cleaning up the transfer on the disc. I was really impressed with that.
Yeah. The Blue Underground disc actually is gorgeous. The transfer is gorgeous, and I also wanted to point out that I think it, and I didn't realize it the first couple times I was paying it, watching, but I really started paying attention. I think the audio track is cleaned up nicely too.
Yeah, it definitely is.
And the Blue Underground disc is awesome, and that also I also wanted to mention, and I almost forgot about it, is how about the music in this thing by Frizzy.
It's amazing, and it's music that Fulci would use in other films too.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, and it's going to be, you know, in the film that we're going to be talking about a little bit later too.
I was gonna mention that too.
But you know what though, the thing is, I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and I'm not going to complain too much about that. I mean, it's a damn fine score. It's one of my personal favorites of any movie, and that's another thing that Fulci, I give him a lot of credit for, is he understands the importance of a great score, and that brings up Fabio Frizzi, who did the score here, and who did plenty of scores for Fulci. That's something that I think shows the mark of a great filmmaker, is when they understand the importance of a soundtrack to their film, and if it works well, that they really, you know, they work well with the composer or what have you, and it's just a good understanding of to make a film flow a little bit better, and I think it adds to the atmosphere, and this, it's no better case than in this movie, and, you know, stuff by like Riz Ortolani or Goblin and other films.
Yeah, and I also agree with you on that. I think that just overall as a director, Fulci really knew how to put the package together. He knew how to shoot it. He apparently knew how to shoot it on a budget and shoot it effectively too.
Absolutely.
He got his shots in, and he knew how to use the music, And I mean, in this movie, dude, when that iconic music starts, and
yeah.
boom, boom, you're right there, you know.
It's some of the most memorable things about the movie has to do with the score. You know what I mean? I think that's something that when you walk away from this movie, it's you'll be humming the score to yourself for a couple days, guaranteed, if you've never seen it before.
And you know the other thing I wanted to talk about this movie a little bit, too, and we're kind of, just to warn everybody, when we do these shows, we just tend to jump around. I guess we could have, like, tried to write notes down and put things in order, but we're just chatting as if we were talking about the movie, just hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Fulci, and he does it here, too. He grabs you right away, because if you remember, we'll talk about the second movie, too, but in this movie, there's a body in a bag. It sits up. You see the guy shoot it. There's the neat bullet effect, and then the character, there's a close-up on his face, and he's like, the boat can leave now. Tell the crew.
Mm-hmm.
And that might not seem like everything, but then you hit that. The music hits you immediately, and it's just like, you know, you're sitting there, and you're like, wow, I'm 30 seconds into the movie, I want to know what the heck just happened. What's going on? Because it doesn't necessarily it actually is telling you the story in order, but then it leaves that for a while, and then mm-hmm. it introduces the character. And not to say it wouldn't be a good movie if it opened with the boat rolling into New York City, because there's a lot of stuff going on there that's interesting. But that opening where it jumps, then it jumps to New York City, it's just Fulci had that ability, again, going back as a filmmaker, just he grabs you and goes, you are going to pay attention to what I'm putting on the screen.
Yeah, and there's a comment that I'm sure a lot of horror fans have heard director Wes Craven say about some of his films, specifically, you know, like Last House on the Left and Hills Have Eyes, is the reason why some of those films are so violent and what have you is because he wanted the audience to be kind of freaked out by him as a director, in the mode of, like, you know, what are you going to see next? You know, this guy has no limits. And there's two things, in my opinion, that Fulci is the absolute king of. He is the king of exactly that. He will put anything on the screen to freak out his audience, and I don't think there's anybody that's has been as effective as him in doing that. And also, he's the absolute king of just, you know, when you take that dread and you take that the negative feeling in a film that it's supposed to give you, you know, and a lot of people do that with story. Fulci clearly doesn't. And the thing about his movies is they all, even if they're not good, they feel like a bad dream, or some of them feel like all-out nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
You know, things are kind of happening for no reason, and they're keeping you off base, and it's kind of confusing at times, and that, to me, is the strength of Fulci, where it would be the downfall of other films, is he can work in that kind of environment and still put across a film that's effective, like we said, with using the wonderful shots, with using a good score. I mean, it kind of shows you that he understands how movies are quote-unquote supposed to be made, but he's making it his way, and I'll be damned if his way didn't work, for him at least.
Well, and I don't know that it would work for a lot of the people, and it's taken as the whole package of the guy that knew how to put the shots together, the guy that knows how to tell a story. You're right. A lot of times he tells things a little differently than other people do, and there's a real nightmare kind of, I don't know. I'm agreeing with you completely, and I would even say, to go to this point, that I've been confused by Fulci movies, but I don't ever really remember being bored by one.
No,
there's always something with the music or the camera or the gore or something. There's something interesting going on.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the perfect example for me would be, you know, out of his horror films at least, New York Ripper. It's a movie that the gore is really good. It's really effective, and it's a nasty, mean little movie. I just don't care for it too much.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, though, there's a lot more value in a film like that than there would be in a ton of other movies I can think of that I don't care for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'd rather sit through that movie again than a lot of the other ones that I don't like. So, I mean, I guess there is a certain personality to his films. And as a fan that sits down and watches horror films, I mean, his films do challenge you sometimes as, well, you know what, this isn't going to be the most complete narrative film. It's going to have gore out of the ass. And you know what, I'm going to try and make something really creepy. And, you know, even if you don't agree with the methods that he does as far as filmmaking and his story and stuff, you have to give the guy at least some credit for being able to pull off some of the stuff that he can with little time, little budget. and in pretty bad predicaments. You know what I mean? He's not, you know, he was never a director that worked for big studios or anything like that. He generally worked out of Italy, and it was all independent productions over there. So, you know, to me, that's one of the most impressive things. And I think that anybody that is interested in making films could certainly learn something from Fulci and watching his stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think we've talked the movie down. We've talked about the movie quite a bit. And do you have anything else to talk about the movie specifically? Because there's one more thing I wanted to talk about, and it's not necessarily the movie.
Not really, but I will say this about it as my final word for the most part, is this film definitely belongs in every horror fan's film collection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, it even says that right on front of the box from Blue Underground. And I do want to talk about the DVDs that are available. There's a lot of used ones floating around. Like Ed and I said earlier, I think we both agree, if you are going to buy a copy of this disc, buy the Blue Underground disc. Because it's beautiful, it sounds great, and it's perfect.
Absolutely.
The only disappointment, and it's not really Blue Underground's fault, because no one has done it. The only thing that boggles my mind, Ed, is I'm pretty sure that you would agree with me, this isn't an underground movie. This is a well-known movie. And it's a pretty huge deal to horror fans.
Yeah.
It shocks the hell out of me. We haven't seen a special edition with any extra features. I mean, you get TV spots, radio spots on the Blue Underground, poster and still, a Fulci bio, and theatrical trailers. But where's, I mean, and I know there's a lot of other Fulci thing, and actually at the end of the show, I think we're going to talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind, because there's a lot of good Fulci material out there. But where's the zombie DVD with the making of feature, or the interviews?
You know, it's funny that you said that, actually, because there is one DVD that's out. I'm not 100% sure if you can get it or not, but I know there's a Shriek Show that had a 25th anniversary cover, and they did it that way. But there is a 98-minute documentary on there, okay, with interviews with cast, pictures, and stuff like that. But the thing about it is the Blue Underground DVD doesn't have those special features, but the print is much better. And also, I was going to mention this, too. The Anchor Bay DVD that we were talking about earlier has definitely an inferior picture to the DVD that Blue Underground put out, but it does have an audio commentary with Ian McCullough.
So I guess you got a triple dip to get the whole picture.
You know what? I'll say this. A lot of times when it comes to movies, they double dip you and fuck you over pretty bad. I mean, you're just paying for something stupid. But to be honest with you, each, you know, pressing of Zombie has had some different things. So put it this way. What's the most important thing to you? Do you want to have it in the best possible picture? Then get the Blue Underground. If you need to have a lot of special features, pick up the Shriek Show. Or if you just want, you know, or if you already have one of those and you want to, you know, get the one with Ian McCullough's commentary, then look for the Anchor Bay one. But I think the Anchor Bay one is out of print right now.
Yeah. Yep, it is. So, but I guess we've covered Zombie pretty well there.
I think
And I actually appreciate you saying that, because I did not know the Shriek Show had all the extra stuff on it.
Yeah, I only remember seeing that one maybe once or twice at a Best Buy like a while ago, and it has the same cover as the Blue Underground one.
I'm going to have to track it down. So
there you go.
Okay, well, I think we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about another Fulci film, which I think Ed and I both really enjoyed. And there's a special connection to this film, so tune in after the break. We're going to talk about City of the Living Dead.
From the mists of infinity, they come, rising from the cold, damp earth to take what is now theirs.
My God, the damn thing's moving!
When the moon turns red, the dead shall rise and walk the earth. From the gates of hell, they have finally come. The gates of hell. No one under 17 admitted without parent or certified adult guardian.
And we're back. Well, like we promised, we're going to talk a little bit about City of the Living Dead, a.k.a. Gates of Hell. It's another Fulci film. I guess you could say it's a zombie film. The story starts off with a priest who, and I'm not sure whether he was just depressed or having a bad day or decided to open up the gates of hell, but he goes to a cemetery and hangs himself. And because he hangs himself in the cemetery and the timing is right, he opens the gates of hell. And basically what that means is at a given certain time, if they don't close the gates of hell, and they, I'll explain who they are in a bit, then the dead are going to rise and be running around and blipping and blopping all over the place. And I'll explain that a little bit later on, too, as well. But so the priest kills himself, and then we're treated to they're all sitting around talking to dead people.
Seance.
Yeah, we're treated to a seance where there's a psychic who sees the priest and sees the gates of hell open, and drops dead, you think. But later on, you'll find out when Christopher George from Day of the Animal and Pieces shows up as a reporter. He shows up and he's investigating the death of the psychic because she dropped dead unexpectedly. Goes to her funeral where apparently nobody attended. They're burying her. Luckily, the guys burying her aren't in really that interested in working too hard and just put a little dusting before 5 o'clock comes and they leave because she's not dead and she wakes up in the casket. Christopher George rescues her, which I think. And I don't mean to interrupt my synopsis, dude, but isn't it the funniest way he saves her? Because
yes,
I mean, you know, if you know there's somebody locked in a casket and you're trying to help them, you grab a pickaxe and you run up to the casket, and you can kind of tell if you've ever seen a casket where the head part is, where the person's lying, and you know they're screaming to help. Do you swing the pickaxe where their head is? Because that's one of the best scenes in the movie, in my opinion. At least it's funniest scene.
Yeah.
But anyway. He gets her out of the casket.
And you figure in a zombie movie, at most times when you're swinging a pickaxe towards something's head, it's good. But this is actually the case where it's not.
Yeah, this is a bad thing to do because she's not a zombie.
Exactly.
But he frees her, and then they find out they need to go to this little town. And the little town's name is, I always forget the name of this little crappy town. But
I just watched it. Dunwich.
Yeah, so did I. Dunwich, which is built on the ashes of Salem and witches and stuff. So they run up to Dunwich, and then there's another group of people in Dunwich that are dealing with the weird stuff, and the two groups meet up, and then they realize suddenly we have to close the gates of hell before all hell breaks loose, literally. And that's pretty much it. It's now them running around. There are a few zombie-type things running around. One particularly angry father in a drill press, and that's the movie. That's the movie. Now we're gonna talk a little more in detail, but I'm gonna give Ed a chance to talk here because I know he's a fan of this movie as I am.
Yes, absolutely. This movie, you know, if you listen to the prior segment when we talked about zombie, this is the one Fulci movie to me that is nothing but a complete nightmare. The movie doesn't make too much sense. It doesn't follow any normal patterns of story and plot. But the thing is that, just like I said in the prior segment too, anything could possibly happen in this movie, and it does. many people who are fans of these types of movies will notice Giovanni Lombardo Radici, a.k.a. John Morgan, a.k.a. the dude who has a man crush on me.
Yes, not often can we say that we love an actor, and at least in your case, he loves you back.
Yes, he does. But basically, the thing is, he plays a small role in this movie, but it's one of the most memorable roles in any horror film, especially to come out of Italy. And also, just another thing I wanted to throw in this movie, there's a character named Tommy Fisher in the movie, who's actually played by Michel Soavi, who was an Italian director who made movies like Della Morte, Della More, or Cemetery Man, The Church, and stuff like that. But he's in this, so...
Which character was Tommy Fisher, though?
Oh, geez. It's a smaller character in the thing. I always miss the guy every time I watch it, but I know he is in the movie. Because I'm actually, you know, I'm a big fan of Suave's movies, and that's how he started out, was an actor, and he actually acted in Fulci movies and a lot of Italian stuff, too, but it's always in small roles. He was only an actor at one point and changed his mind to actually go into making films. But, you know, I guess that's, you know, from what I understand of Lucio Fulci, maybe he will make you want to be a director and not act anymore.
Yeah. Well, and not to completely interrupt your train of thought, but I need to step one place back and actually agree with you on something. Radici, who plays Bob, like you say, it's a really small role. You know, It's funny, I'd never really paid attention to that character until this past time that I, just recent time, today actually, that I watched it, after meeting Radici. I really paid attention, and he is so good in this movie.
Absolutely.
Very small role, but a very talented actor, very talented actor.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because, you know, when you compare his work, so to speak, the other movies that come up is a movie that he absolutely hates called Cannibal Ferox, another movie called Cannibal Apocalypse, and House on the Edge of the Park. This is one of his smaller roles out of all these films, and it's probably his most memorable one.
Fans
go.
I don't know. I put his character here, even though it's such a, for me, I'm paying a huge compliment to him putting this character on the same level as the one from Park. I think he at last was it last house on the par- on the edge of the park. I think
House on the Edge of the Park.
On the Edge of the Park. There's, you know, they put a last in. Now there's not a last. I don't know, but House on the Edge of the Park. I think both of those characters in those movies are both really excellent.
Mm-hmm. I think his best work is House on the Edge of the Park. That's
really
my opinion. Yeah, I think that's his best work. But put it this way, I mean, his role in this is definitely a lot more memorable to most people than his role in Cannibal Ferox. And in Cannibal Ferox, he's a major character in the movie.
True.
So, I mean, I think that's a testament to him. I completely agree with you. I think he did a really good job in the role here. And you know, so did everybody. I think you'll see Fulci favorite Katrona McCall show up in this one, who, by the way, we actually had a chance to meet, too. And she's an awesome lady. She's super cool. She's super nice. But she does a good job in this, and she's not in the most, I guess, you know, relished of roles in this one, because she goes through some shit, you know what I mean?
She gets buried, she gets covered in worms, there's a really neat effect where her eye, or where she bleeds blood from her eyes, so.
It's a great effect, and it's also used, too, in another point in the movie on someone else.
Yeah, we'll talk about the effects in there here in a second, because you got to talk about the effects in this movie.
And it's surprising, too, because one of my favorite effects guys, Gianetto De Rossi, was actually lined up to do the effects for this movie but couldn't. And Gino De Rossi stepped in and did them. And it's actually kind of interesting, you know, to see, you know, how that would portray. But it works well. And I think that, you know, another thing, too, I meant to bring this up earlier. When I brought up Michael Suave, he was supposed to play the role of Bob. But Fulci changed his mind and picked Radici instead. So I think that says a lot, too. Remember when we were talking earlier in the zombie segment about Fulci being a great filmmaker and understanding a lot of the aspects of film? Shows you another one. He wanted a really, really solid actor to play the role of Bob. And even though it's a small role, he understood that he needed somebody strong in that role.
And I also think probably previous relationship as well as... probably respect that I mean, because, you know, Radici's not a big name to a lot of people now, but at the time, this is probably a really small role for him. And you got to believe one of the reasons he did such a small role was probably for Fulci.
You know? It wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, the thing is about Fulci that blows my mind, and I talked about the Para DVD earlier, is that in Italy, his work is not very well respected. He's not really well known. But in America, that's where his cult following comes from, and all across the world, too. But in Japan, I know he's huge, too. But it's kind of sad, you know, because I think that, like we said in the earlier segment, too, about Fulci having strengths as a filmmaker, and especially in horror films, the guy's not making trash. These are not trash films. They might be gore-heavy. They might, you know, follow to the certain specific senses of the horror film fan, but they're not trash. You know, and that's kind of sad to see that he basically has no legacy in the country where he made all these great films.
Well, and you know, the funny you say that, because I actually have some notes in front of me, and I wanted to mention a couple of scenes where like I say, I watched this just today, just now, and it's fresh in my mind. But there's some stuff that he does with images and visuals that I think are amazing.
Oh, yeah.
There's a scene where the psychic, played by Katrina McCall, is seeing the priest hanging. And there's this transition between scenes that I've never seen anything quite like it, where you see her eye, and then the black of her eye, the iris, the black, disappears, and you see the priest hanging in the tree, and he frames it with her eye around it. Now, pre-digital, I have no clue how they pulled that off, but that is such a unique, interesting, I mean, you're watching it, and you don't see stuff like that everywhere.
No, you don't, and I think that also goes into the theme of how Fulci makes his films very dreamlike.
Yeah.
You know, it amazes me, because me and you have had this conversation a lot about Italian directors, you know, both being fans of Italian films in general.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of, you know, people don't give the proper respect to Mario Bava, you know, and I think that's specifically the case as far as Dario Argento goes, because a lot of his style and everything was borrowed from Bava, in my opinion. Yeah. Fulci didn't do that at all. I don't think Fulci borrowed too much from anyone, and that's something that I think, you know, a lot of people don't say about Fulci, is that although some of his stories and some of the things he might make his movies about might be off of borrowed ideas, quote unquote, but the movies don't feel like ripoffs, and he always gets across his way of making a film, which I think is important, and it makes him kind of stand alone as far as other Italian directors. You know what I mean? Even
Absolutely.
When Italian directors try and make gore fests, they still don't get across the dread and the horrible atmosphere and the nightmarish feel that Fulci does. And that's no more evident, I think, in any movie that he's ever made than this one.
You know, and you say dreamlike. Did you notice all the mirrors?
Yeah.
There's a couple of scenes there's a scene where a mirror gets broken, but there's at least one scene I can think of where they get that, and they get this wonderful effect of where you have the mirror, and then the mirror is the reflection, you know. So you get that weird sort of, like, the image goes on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses that at least once I can think of, and I think twice. And like you say, it creates this, like, you might not consciously recognize it, but I think it creates an atmosphere for the movie. Where, like you say, it's very dreamlike, and it really bugs the hell out of me, especially with this movie, and Zombie too. But a lot of people who aren't real big fans of the genre,
mm-hmm.
they hear Fulci, and it's cool, you see the Fulci Lives t-shirts, but a lot of people go, gore, yeah, Fulci, eyeball, and we'll talk about the gore, because there's some really great gore in this movie too. But
mm-hmm.
Again, just like I said with Zombie, everybody gets obsessed with the gore, and I don't think that anybody ever gives the guy his proper credit as just a director. Because like you said, there's the dreamlike quality, and then again in this movie, actually some of the same music from Zombie, but again, mm-hmm. this movie, the music is used to great effect. And you know, it's just, I don't know. This is, let me put something out there, and feel free to jump all over me if you disagree. I love Zombie.
Uh-huh.
I think City of the Living Dead is a better film.
You know what? Prior to me rewatching these two films, I would probably have agreed with you. But it depends, I guess, on what you're talking about. I think Zombie is a stronger film from plot and story standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I think City of the Living Dead is much more visceral. Like, it kind of fucks with your head with the imagery and everything. And there's a lot less in real life, so to speak, in City of the Living Dead. But and it's certainly more supernatural too, in my opinion. It just kind of depends, I guess, on what you look for in a certain movie. But to me, I think that Zombie stands up a lot more on repeated viewings, and I think the end is a little bit stronger in Zombie than in this one.
Absolutely.
But this movie certainly is more nightmarish. It has a feel to it that not too many other films can really get. There's only a few other, like a good example of a movie that's similar to it in the nightmarish feel that it gives you is Phantasm.
Yeah.
You know, it almost makes you feel like you're on another planet or in another dimension. You know, where Zombie, even though they're on the island and stuff like that, you know they're on Earth. You know what I mean? It's not that far off. So I think that, you know, I put it this way. I think as far as creepy and the creep factor of the movie and which one's definitely scarier, I'd go with City of the Living Dead. You know, if you're even scared by horror films. But I think that, you know, but I would actually disagree. I do think Zombie's a little bit stronger of a film. But this one has better acting too, you know?
You know, you did say something that I have to completely agree with you, is I love City of the Living Dead, but I think the ending sucks because I don't get it. They don't even hint as to what the hell. I mean, because the ending, and I'm not gonna ruin the ending, but you, I mean, you know what I'm saying. The ending is it's not even one of those vague, hey, what's going on endings. It's one of those, okay, now that just seems kind of silly.
Yeah, like there's a perfect example would be Fulci's movie The Beyond. The film end is, it's a little bit subtle. It doesn't spell everything out for you, but you could pretty much, there's, put it this way, there, if there's 10 arrows, 7 of them are telling you what's happening and the other 3 are lying to you. So you could pretty much figure it out. With this movie, though, it's all over the place. At the end, it's basically make your own assumption at how the film ends. And that's, maybe that would work if the movie had a really, really strong plot to it and it had a lot of information as it went along. But the fact that it doesn't, and it's not really relying on story as much as it is atmosphere and disturbing images, the end doesn't work.
Well, and it's funny because I agree with you on that a million percent. Because with Fulci's The Beyond, I got it. I knew right off the bat how the ending. And it was, for me, the ending was not at all vague. You know, if you watch the movie, it's telling you all along what could happen, and it happens. And my friends were kind of like, they didn't get it the first time, then I explained it to them, and then the next time they watched the movie, they went, ah. See, I wasn't paying attention. You know, I wasn't really watching the movie. But with City of the Living Dead, I think you could probably have, like you said, 5 interpretations, and you know, it's pretty obvious what's going on in The Beyond, which, you know, dude, I wonder if this is a funny thing, because it's interesting to watch a filmmaker make movies. The Beyond is, what, 83?
Yeah.
So if you look at it, like you say, you know, one's grounded in reality and you have City of Living Dead. So it's like 79, 80, 83. It's like his style was changing, right?
You know what? I think it's 81 actually for The Beyond.
That even makes, 79, 80, 81.
Which is a hell of a strong showing from a director.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's not too many directors that could say that 3 years in a row they made films that were going to be called favorites for 20, 30 years and further and further.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these movies do hold up over time, and I think that the gore is the reason why they hold up. The thing is, too,
well,
these movies weren't made for American audiences either, so they're rather unconventional as far as their story and plot design go. I mean, there's just no way around it. If Fulci's not an American, these movies were thought to be distributed in America, but that's not, he's not an American. He doesn't see things the way that your average American would, so the films are going to be a little bit different and unconventional.
You know, had he been making these in the 60s, I kind of feel like I don't know that he ever would have gotten an American audience. Because I believe what happened with Zombie, City, The Living Dead, especially out in the heartland where we live, because I don't live in a big city. I don't live in Los Angeles or New York or anywhere like that.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see a Fulci film in a theater. You
no.
didn't. So if it hadn't been for the fact that when I was growing up as a youngster... Okay, because I'll use that word because I'm old. But when I was growing up, it was right at the dawn of home video. And I think we got really lucky because I think people just went, we need to put stuff out we need to put stuff out for the mom and pop stores.
Yep.
So they didn't care if it was a weird Italian movie. They'd slap a nifty photo cover like last segment you said freaked you out a little bit with Zombie.
Mm-hmm.
They'd slap a photo cover on it and throw it out there, and they didn't care if it was any good.
Absolutely, and I think that another thing, too, that feeds into that is we're talking about a time period where there's no internet.
Mm-hmm.
Horror fans basically got their news and information from Fangoria magazine. That was it. That was the only thing that was out there, except for, like, small zines and stuff like that. But the thing is, though, Fangoria grabbed these movies by the horns and just ran with it. And I think that, you know, the fact that the major horror outlet for fans at the time being Fangoria were covering these films, and that the fact that most of those fans with that magazine in their hand could go to some video store and rent these and have it be a fresh experience, it fed each other. You know what I mean? Each thing fed each other. And I think that that's something that adds to the legend of these films. I mean, they were, both of these films were considered for the video nasties, you know, although Zombie went through a lot further, you know, as far as the whole thing went. But it also adds to the legend of the films. And I think that that's something that's kind of, you know, helped the movie grow, you know, as it went along. I mean, this movie was released in 1980. It didn't hit the United States until 3-4 years later on video.
I got to ask you a question, and you know this because I know you've been working on this stuff. Was City of the Living Dead ever a video nasty?
City of the Living Dead. See, the thing is about these movies, as far as the UK video nasties list goes, is that a lot of these films were put on a list before they were ever watched or examined by anybody. They were just films that they felt might have something in them that was inappropriate. So it was considered amongst the video nasties, but it was never one. I mean, it came out eventually with cuts in it. You know what I mean? It was cut in 1981 when it was released there. It was given an X rating with the cut. And plus, there's a little bit of a difference here because movies over there, in America, movies are just rated. They're rated for the theatrical, and that's the rating that they stay at. But over in the UK, they were rated for the cinema and then rated for video. It was two separate entities. So the movie was released in theaters with some cuts and then given the X rating on video into the video nasty thing, but it was eventually released with no cuts.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So, because I was just interested because I know that Zombie took several hits and I was just interested because I think we're going to be talking about the gore shortly. Mm-hmm. And I was just interested because I know Zombie had some hassles with being a video nasty. I didn't know that about City of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was... See, the thing is, and it actually surprises me, too, because, you know, just judging from what I've done the research on as far as the video nasties go, is that, you know, a lot of imagery bothers them, and it's not necessarily violent imagery either. Violence against women, violence against animals are two things they're really big on. A lot of movies took hits because of the religious aspects of them, and I'm surprised that City of the Living Dead didn't get more scrutiny due to the fact there's a lot of violent images in the film involving a priest. So it's weird. It just shows you it goes back to the whole confusing nature of the video nasties. But the fact of the matter is, at this day and age, the only thing that the video nasties was necessarily good for was making movies well known that didn't really deserve it. That's not every movie on the list, such as, you know, City of the Living Dead and Zombie. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the movies that got their recognition from being on that list are huge piles of shit. And the only reason why they're known at all is due to the fact that they were included on this list. So luckily for us and for everybody listening, these are two of those films that are good. So, you know, it's definitely, it's a confusing thing, but at the end of the day, it's really stupid.
You gotta love that. Well, you know, as a rule, censorship and ratings and trying to slap labels based upon somebody's opinion always ends up being a pile of bullshit.
It is, and it's really a political thing more than anything over there, from what I understand in the research and from the people that I've talked to. But you know, the fact of the matter is, these movies, you know, they have their place in the history of horror. I mean, they're definitely influential films. You know, anybody out there that's fans of filmmakers like Quentin Tarantino, Eli Roth, Robert Rodriguez, they're fully cognizant of the existence of Fulci. And I think if you watch Planet Terror, which is Robert Rodriguez's half of Grindhouse, you'll see the combination of Fulci. Fulci had a ton of influence over that.
You really think so?
I absolutely think so, as far as the gore goes, because a lot of it was like the... If you notice in Planet Terror, a lot of the gore is oozy, and it has the sound effects to it, which is, to me, in my opinion, I think Fulci's the guy that brought that to the forefront.
Yeah, okay. The melting member, I can definitely...
Absolutely. Plop, plop, and just the whole, you know, like the slimy sound effects and stuff, you know, that's Fulci to me.
True. Well, hey, let's talk about some gore.
Because, absolutely.
You know, in Zombie, we had... I don't consider the Zombie versus the Shark, which I got to go back for a second. Mm-hmm. They said the actor was supposed to play the zombie, dropped out the last minute, and they had the shark trainer there.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell do you train a shark?
You know what? The fact of the matter is, there's probably just a lot of stuff lied about, to be honest. And put it this way, if there was a shark trainer there, he was probably the guy that shot the actual shark, you know, like with the camera.
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me. Like, they paid some guy to film a damn shark for an hour, and that's the end of it. But yeah, I don't... I mean, you know, when you're talking about Zombie, too, you're talking about a movie where most of the zombies were played by derelicts that were given alcohol to play the roles. So it doesn't seem like they would go out of their way to get a zombie trainer. A shark trainer. I'm sure that Fulci had a zombie trainer on the set at all times. So
basically, and we talked about this a little bit in Zombie, there's the one real iconic gore scene. Mm-hmm. And then I even said, like I had said, it kind of trails off. Mm-hmm. This movie, it does kind of the same thing, except there are several, spread throughout the movie, there are several just sit up straight on the couch, wow, did I just see that gore effects. And two of them that are completely, for me, just maybe not as well known as the scene in Zombie, but that are completely iconic. If you know anything about horror films, if I start to describe the scene, you should know right what movie it's from.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is Bob, played by Giovanni Lombardo Radice, meeting the angry father of a young lady who I guess he'd been accused of molesting or something in the past.
Yes.
That is, and let's talk a little bit about that one. I mean, basically the guy in slow motion, and this is very reminiscent of what he did, and I think it worked in Zombie, and I think it worked here. Very mm-hmm. slowly you could see, it's a big giant press, and the guy's pushing his face and head towards the press slowly, very slowly.
The drill bit.
And then the payoff where it hits one cheek, comes out the other cheek, and then you get the scene of it spinning on either side of Radice, which is, I'm sure it was an easy effect to do once the effects guys put it together, but it looks amazing.
You know what? It stands up to today.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? It made me, I was actually thinking about it when I was watching the movie. Because, you know, I knew we were going to be talking about it, so I was paying special, you know, attention to the gore. And during that scene, there was one thing that kind of struck me. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I wonder what the hell guys were thinking in 1980 through 83, whenever they seen the movie for the first time, the did effects.
Yeah.
Like, I really wonder if somebody like Tom Savini or a young Greg Nicotero or something seen the movie and was really blown away at, like, how the hell did they just do that? Mm-hmm. You know, because it's, I mean, the fact that it stands up today, you know, is a big deal. But back then, that must have been completely mind-blowing to people.
And not to blow smoke up our own butts here, but the fact that it stands up today in 2009, almost 30 years later, to two mm-hmm. guys like you and I, who have damn near seen it all, good and bad, and it works for us still.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's something
we're the target audience. We're the picky people that would go, that looks like shit.
Yep. 100%. I couldn't agree more. And it shows you, too, once again, it goes back to Fulci. Because, you know, how I said earlier, they were supposed to get Giannotto De Rossi to do the effects, who was not available. And they got Gino De Rossi. Well, the guy was a replacement. You know, like every Fulci movie ever made, he worked on a small budget with very limited time. And you know, and Fulci was a guy, too, that a lot of people don't realize this, had a ton of health problems, too.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a guy that understood what he needed to do. And you know what? There's this movie, and there's one other movie that always amazed me with how impressive the effects were due to all the problems on set, and it's this film, and it's Return of the Living Dead.
Yep.
Because they're both effect-heavy movies, and the fact that the original people pulled out, or they had a lot of production issues with that, it blows my mind that the effects came off the way that they did. It's a job well done, and you know, you'd be hard pressed to find a movie that matches with this one with effects. I mean, there's plenty of great effect movies, and there's some better, but I'll put it this way: not many are better than this one.
No, and you know, the thing is, like, forgetting the budget and everything else, I've seen a lot of movies that will have that one sequence that's pure genius.
Mm-hmm.
And this one has two, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because you have that drill press, and then there's another effect that is just so friggin' out there. So it fits the surreal, dreamlike state, which is, there's a scene, and just for people, you know, who haven't seen the movie, if you haven't, please go see it now. But we're hoping most people have. But the scene with the girl in the car, just to let you guys know, the priest, he's undead, and he's wandering around. And when he eyeballs you, apparently your eyes bleed. And if you don't break eye contact, you vomit up your internal organs out of your mouth. And there's an extended scene where it's not just blood and gore and red goo and hot dogs she's choking out. They actually made like an attempt to make it look like a stomach and intestines, and that she's vomiting out of her mouth. And
it's been, you know, there's been some talk about some of the stuff being real too.
Yeah. Not that she was really vomiting her stuff up, but they were...
No. But like an actual animal guts and real maggots and stuff like that.
Well, and we haven't even gotten to that part yet. There's another sequence where, Fulci liked you put in his movies, but at some point I would almost say, did he really like you because of some of the things he put people through?
Yeah, he wasn't fond of actors. I know that.
But the scene where she does that and the trick with the eyes bleeding the blood, and that's amazing. I thought that was awesome.
You know what blows my mind about this movie, though, with the effects, for example? Like, you know, I think Savini's a great example of this, but Savini's effects were duplicated a million times over by other people. Nobody really tried to duplicate the effects done in this movie, or at least come close to doing them right. You know, it makes me wonder. I mean, because the movie's really heavy on effects, and the effects are brilliant. But it just blows my mind that nobody really tried to copy them at any point. I've never seen a genuine, rip-off scene of some of this stuff, and it blows my mind.
I personally think people might have tried, but it doesn't remind you of Fulci, because most of those people didn't have somebody like Fulci behind the camera.
You're probably right.
To make it look like it. I've never seen anybody, and of course it's just such a surreal, what the hell kind of moment. I've never seen anybody try to do the whole vomiting of organs up through the mouth kind of thing.
Yeah. But,
the drill press, I've seen similar things done.
Lame attempts, by the way.
Attempts.
9 times out of 10.
Yeah, lame attempts. I mean, you could still have the best effects in the world, but you're not going to cut a scene together like Fulci did.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, like I said, there was a lot of anticipation built up for it. But yeah, no, I just don't think you can. And I also think it's a testament to him that Savini does an effect in Friday the 13th. Every other slasher movie wants to do something similar, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when Fulci did something, and this is not a crack on anyone else, because, I mean, people try to rip off the stuff that was in the Romero movies too. And in fact, it's ironic because some of the gags that he did in Dawn of the Dead was actually something he tried earlier in a couple of other films.
Mm-hmm.
Savini himself, like with the head pulling off and stuff like that. And I was watching a documentary, and I can't remember exactly where Savini tried it before, but the second time around in Day of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
is where he pulled it off the way he actually wanted to. But I just think that when Fulci shot a gore scene, that he made it his own, that no one could even try to do that scene.
Yeah.
And it wasn't something that everybody would just, oh, hey, that looked good on camera, let's copy it. Because it wasn't just a tech... I mean, you and I could sit and watch a movie and appreciate a kill in a movie, mm-hmm. for the technical expertise and the special effects and how nicely it went.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there's a movie that Savini did called Prowler where I'm not terribly fond of the movie, but I love the kills in the movie because they're so well done, but... It's kind of heartless and soulless, and if I saw that somewhere else, I probably wouldn't even recognize it from Prowler. I just think, once Fulci did it, it's his.
Yeah, and he makes it his, you know what I mean? I think that there's a lot of films that try to do stuff with atmosphere and stuff like that that don't work, and it's just that Fulci was one of the guys that could build an atmosphere to a film and do it his way. Like, the thing is, you know when you watch a horror movie and they're trying to do something and things just start not working? Like, they might be in an atmosphere where somebody does an action and it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. That's the thing about Fulci movies. Even though they don't follow your normal conventions of plot and story, everything is still viable. And it's because he establishes, like, in the first 10 minutes of a movie, I think a great example is The Beyond, whenever Katrina McCall's character shows up at the hotel and the painter falls off the thing and almost dies. I mean, he establishes almost right from the beginning that, like, hey, man, you're not in the world that you know, you're in mine. Yeah. And for some reason, the way that he does that, it's acceptable to the viewer, or at least from my experiences with his movies, I would say that it's acceptable, because you just eventually get to a point where you stop questioning things, you start accepting them, and then you find yourself mentally in that same world. And I think that's a strength that Fulci has that not many, if any, other filmmakers really have.
I would agree on that. And in a certain way, I mean, and again, I'm a fan of this other, and I'm not to invoke another Italian filmmaker, mm-hmm. I'm a huge Argento fan.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the problems I think that Argento has with people getting into watching his movies is that I'm not sure he does I think he'd be better served if he had the ability, like Fulci, to hit you right up front and let you know, okay, this is going to be a strange film. Don't expect reality. So, and in a way, I think, and that's not a crack on Argento. I'm meaning as a compliment to Fulci that he's just so damn good at that. That, like, he grabs you right away. Like, and I don't think I mentioned this movie. This is another example of him grabbing you right away and you knowing something's wrong. Where the movie opens with the priest walking through the cemetery, throwing the rope over the thing. It's interspersed with the seance, and he hangs himself. And the, and the person in New York City sees it, and there's that supernatural, what the hell just happened? There's a seance, they're seeing it, something weird, just boom. Within the first 2 minutes, like you say, he let you know. You're in a completely you're in Fulci's world now, and you just kind of roll with it, and it works. It makes the rest of the movie work.
And you know, to hit back on the point you made with Argento too, a lot of times, I mean, Argento is a guy who generally made giallo films, okay, which are a little bit different than these. You know, well, actually, they're a lot different from these, but mainly in Argento's movies, you have a lot to do with police procedure.
Yeah,
and if you don't follow the most linear, strong storyline, the police procedural stuff could be a little bit over the top because it's not based in reality, so to speak. But when you watch films like City of the Living Dead, police have no factor at all. It's almost like, you know, in Argento's films, you're dealing with a human killer, which can be anybody. You know what I mean? That's what you generally see in real life, somebody that went nuts and stabbed a bunch of people or something like that. But in Fulci's movies, it's so in another dimension that you don't even say to yourself, well, how come the police didn't come here? It doesn't matter because the threat is bigger than any army, police, any, it doesn't matter. Everybody's kind of in chaos because, you know, for an example, in City of the Living Dead, the gates of hell have just been opened and it's something that the earth has never dealt with.
Yeah.
So all the absurd things that happen, well, yeah, the gates of hell just opened. Who the hell knows what can happen? Anything can happen. Yep. So, and I think that that's something that Fulci can kind of, you know, maybe at some point Fulci realized, hey, I don't want to write stories like this. I'd rather write them in some weird land that doesn't exist due to the fact that his creative landscape's way more open than if he does something strictly in New York City or strictly with police. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I agree. No, I mean, I don't know. I just, we could have talked about three movies. Well, we could talk about a lot of Fulci movies. And like you said, he just had these, like, year after year after year, he had, like, this strong period where I think, and of course, I personally, like I said, I think City of Living Dead's stronger than Zombie, but that's not a crack on Zombie. I think Zombie's one of my favorite films. City of Living Dead is one of my favorite films. And Push Me to Shove, out of the three, I probably like The Beyond better than the other two.
I do, too. I think The Beyond's his best work, personally.
For me, I think Zombie, City of the Living Dead is a step up, and then he just kept getting better over this period of time and kept hammering it out. I mean, wow, what a great director. And now, let me throw one thing out at you on this movie.
Sure.
I didn't like, and they use it three times in the movie, the whole grab somebody by the hair and all of a sudden you're pulling their brains out and they die.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I think that goes more to the nature of Fulci working on his own level. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think that it's a little bit different, of course, than having zombies just eating people.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Let's be honest. In Zombie, the zombies themselves are just undead things coming back to life. Although that can be said here, it's more along the lines of not only are they coming back to life, but they're also possessed by something evil.
Well,
so therefore, it kind of gives them the strength to pull the frickin' brain out of the head. It's reaching a little bit, but I think there is a little distinct difference between the zombies, so to speak. So, although, yeah, I agree with you completely, it's a little bit stupid and whatnot, it works into the factor of how Fulci tries to gross you out. I just think it's another way they try to do that.
Do you think these are even really zombies, though?
I do.
Because they have that, there's another thing where they kind of blip around, and I had mentioned that earlier. They'll like, they hop all around the screen, they disappear and reappear, disappear and reappear. And it's not, and I'm not talking about bad editing either. This is actually, they're supposed to have, they're these supernatural creatures that can just like pop up unexpectedly and get you. And I like that. I actually really like that. But when you're looking at them, yeah, they look kind of like zombies, but they're not mindless. They stare at people. More than one of them have the ability to look at you and make your eyes start to bleed and stuff. So there's something where they're getting in your brain or your head somehow from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't. Yeah, they're kind of a zombie. They look kind of like a zombie, but in zombie, they're actual like voodoo zombies eating flesh. They're gonna grab you and chew on you. City of the Living Dead, I just didn't feel like they were more supernatural to me, almost like demons or something.
Yeah, I would say they're more demons than anything. Mm-hmm. But they're zombie-like, certainly, in the way that their actions are and the way that they look, so to speak, too. I think this movie, as strange as it is, has a lot in common with The Beyond. In both movies, yeah. And as the Gates of Hell opening and stuff like that, it's almost made as kind of a, like, the two movies were made with each other in mind. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's hard to say, but to be honest with you, I mean, the funny thing is when you watch those two movies back to back, there are similarities, but it's amazing how different they are, really, just due to the fact of where they made them and, you know, what's what. But, I mean, it's just honestly, it's a testament of Fulci when you compare these two films that he was able to make two films that were completely similar in base but are just totally different when you watch them.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And like I said earlier, I almost feel like he was going down a path. He starts with zombie. City of the Living Dead is kind of like partly zombie, partly beyond, and then he gets to the beyond. And it's like it was like almost like City of the Living Dead is kind of in the middle, like a transition between the three films.
But yeah.
I would tell everyone right now, if you want to have a heck of a Saturday night or a heck of a Friday night, and you want to have a triple feature, you could do a lot worse than Zombie City, Living Dead, and The Beyond, which we're not going to talk about The Beyond because we just don't have enough time to talk about three separate movies. But that's also another great film from Fulci.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's a testament to the guy's work too, especially if you've ever seen his stuff like how, you know, House by the Cemetery.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like we said, The Beyond or The Black Cat, or even stuff like Contraband, like Italian crime stuff, you know, or even The Psychic is incredibly different than his other films. So,
well, and you had mentioned New York Ripper.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's another one.
I know
one
you're not fond of it. I'm way more fond of it than you are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. I don't, everything the guy did was interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, he really flexed his director muscles, if you will, on his projects. I mean, I think that there's, you know, the guy had written a ton of comedic stuff. He directed The Eroticist, which Severin Films put out, and it's sex comedy that's actually pretty entertaining. He made Don't Torture a Duckling, which I think is still to this day probably his most underrated film, which is his giallo.
Agreed. I think that's
it's
great
brilliant
movie.
It's a brilliant movie. It really is. And it's really, really underrated as far as the story, the plot, the gore, the just the overall nature of the film. Incredibly underrated to me. But, you know, like you said, you can't really go wrong with the two we talked about here today and The Beyond either. I mean, the guy's made a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, personally, I would think they might not all be classics, but at least the horror titles and genre titles and Fulci's catalog, I personally think I've yet to find a Fulci film I didn't find something interesting with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, like I said, I don't really care for New York Ripper, but it's not completely worthless.
No, you know, it's not we've seen, definitely.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's definitely value in the film. I mean, the thing is that, you know, I say I don't like the movie. Well, this is the thing. At the time, Fulci was getting a lot of crap for being quite misogynistic in his films. So he said, okay, I completely disagree with you, but if you want to see a misogynistic film, I'll show you one. And that's why he made the New York Ripper.
Yeah.
But you know what the thing is? I might not like that movie, but I give the guy a hell of a lot of credit for going out there and basically saying, you know what, fuck you. I'm going to make the movie that I want to make. And I don't care if it bothers you. I'm not here making movies for you. I'm making them for fans that want to see them. And if you don't like them, don't watch them. And I think it goes back to the whole Video Nasties thing and everything, you know. The Lucio Fulci's films are not for everyone. Everybody's not going to love these movies. But if you're looking for something different, if you'd like to see some different twists on the zombie movie that maybe you've seen done a million times, you know, Fulci's a good direction to go in. I think people that haven't experienced his films will be extremely interested by them at the very least.
Let me throw something at you, based on something you just said.
Mm-hmm.
you and I are Bava fans, Argento fans, and Fulci mm-hmm. fans. And I kind of disagree with something you said, sort of, unless you okay. didn't mean it this way.
Okay.
If you told me that, said to me, hey, John, I'm a huge fan of horror, but I don't like Argento.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm a huge fan of even Italian cinema or giallos, but I'm just not a big fan of Argento. I like some of the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I hate Argento, and I don't like any of his movies.
Okay.
I could say, well, I disagree with you, but that's fine. I can see where you're coming from. But if you try to sit across from me and tell me I'm a huge horror nerd, I'm a huge horror fan, I love horror movies, and I don't like Fulci movies at all, mm-hmm. I have a problem with that. Because he's done... I mean, Argento has a style. Fulci's done so many things, and so many things differently. If you try to sit there and tell me you're a huge fan of horror, but there's not a single Fulci movie that you like,
mm-hmm.
I'd have a problem with that. What do you think? Would you agree or disagree with that?
I guess I could agree with that, and I'll tell you why. Because a lot of horror fans, let's face it, I mean, especially if you grew up in the 80s, like when I grew up, the lowest common denominator, unfortunately, is gore.
Yeah.
I love gore, don't get me wrong, I'm not downing the stuff at all, because I think it's brilliant work. But the thing is, the gore can connect with people a lot quicker than... You know, like, put it this way, I could understand more if somebody doesn't want to watch a Bava film.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot to do with beautiful set pieces and set design, and there's a lot of attention to detail, you know? But let's face it, the majority of the horror fans out there are guys that on a Friday or Saturday night want to sit around with some buddies, drink a six-pack, and watch some balls-out gore. You know what I mean? It just, Fulci's films fit into that more so than somebody like a Bava or an Argento do.
You could get him with Bay of Blood from Bava.
That's true. Absolutely. But you know what? The majority of Bava's work, though, isn't like that.
No.
And you know, even with Argento, I think that if you are not interested in beautiful filmmaking, so to speak, or beautiful shots, or really nicely composed shots, Argento's not going to do much for you. I mean, there's some good gore, there's some creepy stuff, but I think that a lot of the strength of Argento is through his actual filmmaking and style. You know, they're over-stylized. Giallos in general are over-stylized, and that appeals to me, okay? I can understand why it wouldn't appeal to everybody,
yeah.
But Fulci stuff, though... The only thing I would maybe disagree with you on is that if people aren't into his stuff, I would say that 9 times out of 10 it has more to do with the completely strong about, you know, storylines than anything, because they don't exactly explain to you every step of the way what's going on. So if you need to have everything fleshed out for you, you're not going to like his movies. But if you can hold back a little bit and kind of say, okay, you know what, I'm going to put this in, I understand it doesn't have the type of story that most movies I'm used to has, mm-hmm. and watch it for what it is and enjoy it, then that's better for you. You know, but I understand if people don't like any of this stuff because it's foreign.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that's not made for everybody. And if you grew up on the 80s stuff and you love slasher films or Evil Dead, and, you know, this might not be the stuff for you. But if you've watched, you know, how many times can you watch The Evil Dead? It's a great film, but, I mean, can you watch it every day of your life? No. So you're going to need to find new stuff to watch. And hopefully, you know, for some people listening, this is some new stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I you make a lot of good points. For me... I was kind of in my mind when I asked you that question, I was thinking along the same lines of you, where it's like, you know, if nothing else, the gore from something like Zombie is going to appeal to everybody who considers themselves a horror fan. But
yeah.
I guess there are people out there that can consider themselves Twilight watching, Brad Pitt loving vampire fans who go, you know, who think that, you know, Tom Cruise is dreamy and shit, call themselves horror fans who might not like Fulci. So there you go. And if you come anywhere near me at any convention, I'm probably going to kick you in the balls. But that's okay.
Well, just let me say this, though, too, and throw this at you and see what you think of this. Do you think a Fulci movie would certainly appeal to somebody whose favorite directors, so to speak, are like an Alfred Hitchcock or a Roman Polanski? Because they're looking for the suspense. They're looking for the, you know what I mean? Like, drag me into this.
I believe, honestly, that... I can find a Fulci movie for anybody. And I think if somebody said to me, I'm a Polanski fan or I'm a Hitchcock fan and that's what I do and I haven't seen a Fulci movie, I would probably say that you haven't seen Don't Torture a Duckling.
It's a good call, actually. I agree with you.
And that's just my respect for Fulci. It's like, you know what? If I got the guy sitting there with the Dawn of the Dead t-shirt on, I'm going to show him Zombie if he's never seen a Fulci film. If you're a Hitchcock fan, I'm going to pop Don't Touch Our Duckling in.
Or maybe The Psychic, too.
Maybe The Psychic. And if you're kind of one of the people who's like into the weird, you know, 70s things like Devil's Reign or something like that, I'm going to throw The Beyond at you. I just really think there's a Fulci movie for everybody.
Yeah, and another one that I wanted to mention, too, that a lot of people don't talk about, it's a really cool Fulci film, and it's not horror, and it's not comedy, or it's not anything like that, but it's called New Gladiators. It's not the best movie, but it has Fred Williamson in it. It's like a futuristic movie, like, you know, what the hell's the one movie called about New York? After the Fall of New York. And, I definitely say that as far as, you know, City of the Living Dead goes, it's a very, very solid horror film. And it's very different. And if you do find yourself liking stuff like Phantasm, you know, stuff like that, I think you'll get a kick out of this one. So if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. I wouldn't recommend this one as highly as Zombie for Every Fan's horror collection. But if you're a fan of Fulci and if you really like Zombie, you're going to want to add this one too.
I can't disagree with that. Personally, I like City of the Living Dead, but probably to the average horror fan, Zombie is going to be much more approachable.
Mm-hmm.
And much more enjoyable. So, but why don't we take a break, and after we come out of the break, we'll wrap things up. What do you think?
Sounds good.
Okay, cool. We'll be right back after this.
I've got Abby! What do you think of my powers now?
American International presents Abby, the story of a woman possessed. She took the devil for a lover, and he possessed her, body and soul. Abby, a story of terror, lust, and exorcism.
Grab her arms and hold her.
Abby, starring William Marshall as the exorcist.
I command you to vacate this body now.
And Carol Speed as Abby. Can anyone stop her? Can anyone help her? Can anyone save her soul?
I've got Abby!
Abby, the story of a woman possessed. Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
I'm Carol Speed, starred in Abby, Lulu in the Mac, and I'm going to be on Gut Munchers Podcast. Pay attention. Mark the date down, listen to me, and I love all of you. Pay attention, that's where I'm going to be.
And we're back. I'm going to ask a surprise question. It's really not a surprise question, but
okay.
That's behind the scenes. What's your favorite Fulci film, and what's your least favorite Fulci film?
Favorite is definitely The Beyond, and least favorite, I would probably have to say Manhattan Baby, but I haven't seen all of them. I actually have a DVD of The Sweet House of Horrors, which is a TV movie he made, and I've never watched it yet, but shame on me for that one. But I'd have to say Manhattan Baby is one of my least favorites. What would you say yours are?
My favorite film is The Beyond from Fulci, with a close second being City of the Living Dead, but I think The Beyond is just a little bit better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And my least favorite Fulci movie, actually, I haven't seen Manhattan Baby. New York Ripper was pretty good, but I don't really have a Fulci movie that I hate. But probably the one I enjoyed the least is I didn't get into his Giallo. I didn't get into Don't Torture a Duckling as much as I thought I was going to.
Really?
Yeah. It's not a bad movie in any stretch of the imagination, but I just didn't get into Don't Torture a Duckling as much as I thought I was going to. And that was right in the middle of my Giallo phase.
Mm-hmm.
So I might have to go back and revisit it, but that's probably the one that I like the least. I mean,
I think it's very different from other Giallos, I think.
Yeah.
So it stands out to me as one of the different ones of the genre that I really like.
I'm looking on my shelf here, and I actually have it. It's one of those movies I'll probably have to revisit, and I don't think I ever wrote a review for it, so I might have to go back and take a look at it. But
there you go.
But yeah, I mean that's it for that'd be pretty much it for what I was thinking. So Fulci good.
I think we did. Yeah, I say pretty good job.
And just so everybody knows, I mean, I know we wandered and meandered a bit and talked about, you know, for me, this is a Fulci show, but you can't talk about an Italian director without comparing him to guys like Bava and Argento, because I don't think these guys don't operate in a vacuum. So when you're discussing their movies, you're discussing what's good and bad about them. You can't do that in a vacuum either.
Exactly.
So, but I hope everybody enjoyed this first show. This is our January 2009 show, episode one of the Gut Munchers podcast. Just a little bit of site business, and then I'll give Ed a chance to talk about what's going on over Blood Type. If you go to the front page of the Gut Munchers website, you'll notice we're still having our Tales from the Dark Side contest. That's open till February 10th. There's an email link. Click it, send us an email, and you're entered to win one of the giveaway copies from Tales from the Dark Side. It's that easy. There is, you know, nothing hard about that at all, and if you don't sign up, I just don't understand why you wouldn't want free stuff.
But I wanted to tell everybody this, too. If you're really, really strapped for cash, and who isn't, you know, we're running the same contest over at BloodTypeOnline.com. If anybody else is afraid they're not going to be able to get a copy at Gut Munchers, come over and enter ours as well. You could win one. Hey, you could win two. You never know. All you have to do is just email us at BloodTypeContest@gmail.com with the subject heading being Tales from the Dark Side with your name and address, and we'll hook you up. And obviously, we're always writing reviews over at Blood Type Online, so check that out, and we'll have a lot more stuff in the future for you as well.
Yep, and, you know, there's a link to my site on his site and to his site on my site, because I think, as far as contest-wise, you're silly not to try to take every opportunity you can to win stuff, but I dig what's going on over Blood Type. I was there for a while, and then I'm happy to support you guys, and I'm glad you showed up and hung out with us for a little bit over here, too.
And thanks for having me, John. I really appreciate it. And obviously, everybody out there, I highly recommend you check out gutmunchers.com with all the great reviews. And, of course, the webcomic. You can't beat a webcomic, right? Especially when it's zombie-related.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's funny that you mentioned that, because I was almost going to forget to pimp the webcomic. We also have a weekly webcomic, like Ed said, that's zombie theme related, and that's actually the name. That's where the site name came from, Gut Munchers. I want to talk a little bit about what we're going to do next month in the February show. My good buddy Jason, who has much love for the William Girdler, Jason Payne, is going to be on the show helping me out, and we have a really killer interview with the lovely and talented Carol Speed from the William Girdler classic Abby. She also talks about working with Jack Hill and Richard Pryor, and her last film happened to be Disco Godfather with Rudy Ray Moore. So it's an incredible interview.
And I just wanted to say too, actually, and this is not a cheap plug, I'm saying this because I feel this way, I can't wait for the interview myself, so I can't wait to listen to that. I'm a fan of her work, and it's certainly an interview that, you know, you haven't seen anywhere else before, so definitely check back for that. I know you guys are going to like it, and I could vouch for John. He's a great guy, and I know he's going to do a good job on it, so I can't wait to hear it personally.
Thanks, Ed. I'll send that $20 in the mail.
Good, because I really need gas money right now. I'm screwed.
Well, this is John, and with me is always, with me this month at least is Ed, and hope you had a good time listening to it. I know I had a good time recording it. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you, and goodbye, folks.
See you next month.
The Gut Munchers podcast is a presentation of gutmunchers.com.